set up an observation point, and wait.
Sam Wingo might already be here waiting.
He might, and there's nothing we can do about that. He looked at her. Can you do it?
Do what?
Pull the trigger on Wingo if it comes to it, with Tyler there? Michelle didn't hesitate.
I'm not going to let anything happen to you, Sean. You can take that to the bank and cash it.
Chapter 47. The man said, "This is more valuable than gold, you know that? Than platinum. Than hell, I don't know what." Ellen Grant sat in the car and stared over at him. "I understand that," said Grant. "More than platinum. And yet you're only charging for platinum. Thanks for the deal." The other man was Milo Pratt. He was short, chubby, and had a lot of years in places that had allowed him to get the platinum Grant needed. He smiled at Grant. "Do you know what the price of platinum is?" "High. Higher than gold, probably." "Gold isn't even in the ballpark. What's your name again?" "Not important." "Why do you want it?" "I'm curious, always have been," said Grant. "It's just my thing." Pratt smiled more broadly. "But why this thing? Why this info? Guy has to ask, you understand, right?"
"Perfectly. I would have been disappointed if you hadn't asked."
"Good, good. So why, really?
Isn't it obvious?"
"You a trader? I mean, I got no problem with that, but I would like to know."
"Not a trader.
Quite the opposite, in fact."
"You a Fed? Got some squirrely covert op going on?"
Grant pointed at him and smiled.
"You have a quick eye. It's subject to change, of course. Nothing I can do about that."
"I completely understand that. I'll simply have to build that into the op." Pratt held up a flash drive.
"It's all here."
"I'm sure it is." Grant held out his hand and took it. "I know the money is in my account,
or you wouldn't be holding that," said Pratt.
"If I were you, I'd do it exactly the same way, but with just one small difference."
"What's that?"
Grant slammed Pratt's neck against the steering wheel, crushing his windpipe. He watched as Pratt suffocated and then died, collapsing sideways in the seat. Grant said to the dead man, "I would never do the exchange face to face in a lonely spot, because I might end up dead. Like you." He got out of the car and walked away. A minute later, he climbed into his car and drove below the speed limit to his next stop. The retrofit on the old radio station was progressing nicely. He knew his men were working hard, but they would have to work still harder. After the rehab was done, he would bring in his tech team. They were a multinational bunch. Not a single one was committed to anything other than himself. No flag wrappers in the lot of them. He liked that. When money was the motivation, you knew exactly where you stood. They were the best he could find, and Grant knew where to look. The Pentagon was as busy now as it was during the day. It truly was a building that never slept, and where people visited, ate, and worked at all hours. He cleared security and went directly to his father-in-law's office once more. He was admitted immediately, because he was expected. He and Dan Marshall were having dinner tonight, and Grant expected to get some scuttlebutt about things he needed to know about. Marshall greeted him as enthusiastically as before, first gripping his hand and then giving him a bear hug.
"Leslie says you're keeping really busy lately, Alan. You remember you have to keep some time open for those grandkids of mine."
"I will, Dan. I promise. Just got quite a few things in the hopper right now. Want to build a good life for us. And Leslie and I want to give you more grandchildren, too. We're not stopping at 3. We're still relatively young." Dan beamed. "Never hear me complaining about more rug rats to pal around with."
The two men walked to a restaurant in the Pentagon and sat at a table well away from the others.
"You look worried about something," said Grant, observing Marshall closely.
Marshall chuckled, rubbed his face, and took a sip of the Coors draft he had ordered. Grant drank only water. When Marshall put the glass down, he had stopped chuckling and looked far more serious. "You've been reading the news?" he asked. Grant nodded.
"Bizarre, to say the least. How over $1 billion of treasury money ended up going missing in Afghanistan along with a reservist."
Marshall looked around to make sure no one was close enough to overhear. "It was actually in euros."
"Euros? Why?"
"Can't really say."
"What the hell was the money for?"
Grant then quickly added, "Sorry, I'm sure that's classified."
"There are rumors all over the press now, really bad ones. Conspiracy, breaking the law, misuse of funds, and it all goes up very high."
"Rumors with some truth to them?" asked Grant quietly.
"Let me put it this way, Alan. I can't say unequivocally that they're not true."
"You haven't seen anything yet," thought Grant. He reached over and put a hand on his father-in-law's arm.
"Dan, you're in procurement. You buy stuff for the army. You control a lot of money. But you're not getting caught up in all this, are you?"
Grant liked Dan Marshall. He really did. But he didn't like him well enough to not sacrifice him in order to achieve his goal. There was no one in the world he liked that much. Marshall passed another hand over his face as though he were trying to rub a layer of skin off.
"Well, Alan, I'd say this sucker is big enough to catch a lot of folks."
Grant withdrew his hand.
"I'm sorry, Dan." And in a way he was sorry. But that was all. He had put his father-in-law in this situation. He knew it would come to this. He hoped, for his wife's sake, that her father would be mostly spared.
But my mother and father hadn't been spared. They were ruined, crushed, and then they killed themselves. The only casualties, the only ones, when there should have been far more. He said, "What about this reservist, Sam Wingo? What's his story?"
"Who knows? The son of a bitch hasn't been seen since he drove off with Uncle Sam's money.
I saw on the web that some of the money was going to Muslim insurgents, but it didn't say which country."
Marshall looked at him miserably. "I saw that, too.
That will not sit well with some over there.
From the little I've been told, the diplomatic channels are being used so much they're molten hot. I still have no idea how the media caught on to it. It was highly, highly classified."
"It's a mystery to me, too," lied Grant. "But I'm sure if you catch Wingo, you'll be able to put all this to rest quickly. Any leads there?"
"There might be, actually. I've been kept in the loop on this for a number of reasons, mostly because my ass is tied up in the outcome. Wingo has a son, Tyler. His mom died, but Wingo remarried." He lowered his voice. "Now, the marriage was not a real one."
"The hell you say," exclaimed Grant, who knew this perfectly well.
"No, it was just a sham. Part of the mission Wingo was going on. Convoluted, but he also just couldn't leave his kid on his own. Now the wife has disappeared. No one knows where she is.
In a proper grave in the middle of nowhere with her throat slit because she disobeyed and then tried to kill me," Grant said to himself, while he kept looking straight at Marshall with polite interest on his face. Marshall continued,
"And there are two investigators that somehow got involved, Sean King and Michelle Maxwell. Former Secret Service who've been poking around even though they've been warned off.
But no news on Sam Wingo's whereabouts. It's believed that he made it back to the States, probably on private wings or maybe a cargo plane. He might have had fake IDs no one knew about. From all the reports I've read on him, the guy is good, real good. That's why he was picked for this mission."
"He could have stolen the money," Grant pointed out.
"Yes, he could. And if he did, he might have come back to get his son and then disappear, and actually that's what he might have done."
His voice sank to a whisper. I just got an email that said Tyler Wingo had disappeared from FBI custody. This statement did startle Grant.
What?
Yeah, I know. They had taken him and King and Maxwell into custody or protection or some such because a motel they were at blew up. I don't know all the details, but you probably saw that on the news. Over in South Alexandria?
Right. I did see something about that. I thought it was a gas leak.
Don't think so. And where are King and Maxwell? If I had to guess, they're trying to find Tyler. They're probably thinking if they find Tyler, they'll find the dad. And that's exactly what I think, too, thought Grant. Which is why I'm having them followed right now.
Chapter 48. Michelle never would have planned an operation this way. It was way too fast and loose. Little prep and no real evaluation of the pros and cons. And no true plan B when something unexpected happened. Her cover spot had several weak points, any one of which a guy like Sam Wingo would be able to exploit in his sleep. She was 12 feet up in the crook of a tree with her sniper rifle making wide arcs over the landscape below. Sean was taking up his position near where they believed the father and son might actually meet. But they could be way off about that. And they could be really way off if the fishing hole didn't turn out to be the right spot at all. He was communicating with her via an earwig and power pack. She carried the same equipment. It felt like they were back in the service. And in a way, this was very much like protection detail. She wasn't going to let anything happen to Sean or Tyler. Sam Wingo was still not a sure thing for her. He could go either way. And depending on which way he did go, she might have to put a round in him, right in front of his son. Michelle looked down at her trigger finger and wondered if she could do it. But she already knew the answer. She could, and would. Right now, Sean was her protectee, and she would take a bullet for him if it came to it. Over her earwig, she heard Sean say, "Got an eyeball on something, but I can't make it out, just a glimpse."
"Where?"
He gave her the coordinates, and she swung her scoped rifle in the direction. She saw something. It flitted in and out among the trees, almost like vapor. Then she locked in on it.
"It's Tyler,"
she said. At least they had come to the right place. "And his father?" Michelle scanned the area.
"No eyes on him yet."
"He's probably reconning right now." "That's exactly what I'm doing," said a voice. Sean began to turn toward it when the voice said, "Don't." Sean froze. In his ear, Michelle whispered,
10 yards to your right, behind the oak. Can't confirm it's Wingo."
Sean gave a bare nod. "Where's your partner?" asked the voice. "I want her down here right now." Sean said, "Why's that, Sam? Want to gun us both down?" He said this in an overly loud voice. "Who are you?" asked Wingo, who had revealed just a sliver of himself behind the oak. "Someone trying to help your son," he added in a very loud voice. "Isn't that right, Tyler?"
"Shut up," barked Wingo, "or I'll put a round in your leg."
"Didn't you come to meet Tyler?"
"He's right over there."
"Tyler, join the party."
"I said shut up," yelled Wingo.
He edged out past the oak, his gun pointed at Sean. Michelle said into Sean's earwig,
"I have a clean shot, Sean."
He gave a curt shake of his head, and Michelle's hand moved away from the trigger guard. "We could have taken you out right now, Wingo, but that's not what we're here for."
"Bullshit."
"Then here's proof," said Sean. Michelle fired a round that struck a branch 2 feet above where Wingo was standing. It fell to the ground a foot away from him. Wingo jumped back behind the tree.
"Now do you believe us?" asked Sean.
"Dad, Dad!" Tyler came rushing into the clearing and then pulled up short when he saw Sean. "What are you doing here?"
trying to talk your dad out of shooting me. Tyler looked around.
Dad? Dad, are you here?
Sean knew why Wingo was hesitating. If you come out, I'll have my partner come out too, Wingo. We are here to help. Tyler added,
They are, Dad. They've really been helping.
A few moments later, Michelle appeared at the edge of the clearing, her sniper rifle pointed down. Sam Wingo saw this and slowly stepped clear of the oak. They all stared at each other. Sean said, you might want to hug your son, Sam, just to prove to him you're not a ghost. Father and son eyed each other for what seemed an impossibly long moment. Then Wingo holstered his gun and spread his arms wide. Tyler rushed to him. The two hugged for a long time. Tears ran down both the Wingo's faces. Michelle drew closer to Sean and said quietly,
This whole thing just got very complicated.
He nodded. That's the face of a guy who got set up and doesn't know what the hell is going on.
Which means he may not know any more than we do.
Maybe, maybe not. But now we can at least ask him. Wingo finally stopped hugging his son, but kept one arm protectively around his shoulders. He wiped his face of the tears while an embarrassed Tyler did the same. Wingo walked towards Sean and Michelle. How did you two get involved in all this?
Just saw your kid running down the street one dark and stormy night after the army told him you were dead. Total coincidence.
Wingo slowly nodded. I appreciate your not shooting me when I came out from cover. And I appreciate your not shooting me, said Sean.
Dad, you look different, noted Tyler.
Wingo rubbed his shaved head and new beard and said, Have to when people are looking for you. What people? Asked Sean.
Good question, shot back Wingo.
Your people? The military? You've apparently created a huge buzz at the Pentagon and the White House.
Wasn't supposed to go down like that.
How then?
Classified. Sean looked disappointed. After all you've been through, you're gonna pull the classified crap? Look, I could be court-martialed for discussing any of this with you.
You've been listening to the news?
Wingo nodded.
Then you know a lot of it has become unclassified.
DHS told us about the nearly 5,000 pounds of euros.
Over $1 billion worth that you somehow managed to lose.
Tyler looked at his dad.
Is that true, Dad?
Wingo looked uneasily from Michelle to his son, but said nothing. If we work together, said Sean, we might make some progress. But you said DHS had looped you in, so you're working with them.
No, and we've been to see the FBI and the president, and we decided not to work with any of them, at least not yet.
Wingo looked shaky. You met with the president? Over this?
Apparently on his big item to-do list, you were at the numero uno spot. Congratulations.
Shit, said Wingo, putting a hand over his eyes. I can't believe this is all actually happening. Well, it is happening, snapped Sean, and we have to address it. How? Asked Wingo. What can you do?
Dad, they're investigators. They used to be with the Secret Service. They're really good. They can help.
I'm not sure anyone can help me, son.
So you're just giving up? After dragging your butt back here from Afghanistan? You're going to let them get away with it.
Tyler angrily looked at her. My dad is not a quitter.
I'm not saying he is or he isn't, Tyler, but the real answer is up to him.
Sean added, We'll help you, if you let us.
Why? Asked Wingo. Why open up a can of worms that isn't your problem?
I think we've already made it our problem, he answered. And we can't put our heads in the sand and hope it goes away. So the only way it gets resolved is to pool our resources and figure it out.
Tyler took his father's arm. Come on, Dad. Do it.
An instant later, Michelle said in an urgent tone,
Someone's coming.
Chapter 49. Wingo and Tyler went left. Sean and Michelle darted right. The block of men with guns came at them from east and west, converging on the four fleeing people. Yet Michelle's keen hearing had given them a bit of a head start. Hopefully it would be enough. Right now, it looked too close to call. Michelle pushed Sean ahead of her.
Take the next left down that path. It'll take you to the truck. Get in, start it, and wait 2 minutes for me.
I'm not leaving you here to go against these guys alone, Michelle.
I've got the sniper rifle. Just be prepared to drive a lot faster out of here than you did getting here. Now go.
But she gave him another hard shove.
Go!
Sean sped down the path and turned left. Michelle wheeled around, did a quick calculation of the terrain, and raced off to the right, taking up position behind a fallen tree. Using that as her cover and the trunk as the support for her weapon, she readied her rifle and set her crosshairs on the spot from where she believed they would be coming. She calmed her breathing, relaxed her muscles, and waited. The first man veered into her line of fire and paid the price for that with a shot to the knee. He went down screaming and clutching at his ruptured joint. Michelle immediately sprang up, ran to her right, and took up a new position at the confluence of two trees that were leaning against each other. She readied her rifle and swung it across the terrain in front of her. They would be proceeding with caution now, she knew. She acquired the next target and fired before it could disappear on her. The slug ripped into the man's arm, where he had left it exposed by a couple of inches. He dropped, gripping his limb, trying to stanch the blood flow. Again, Michelle moved as soon as she had fired. She was listening for the sound she needed to hear, so desperately wanted to hear. A few seconds later, it came. The sound of her Land Cruiser starting up. That meant Sean, at least, had gotten to safety. Now she needed to get there, too. The next sound she heard was a bullet whistling past her head and blowing off a chunk of wood from the tree she was standing near. A piece of bark hit her in the head, and blood started flowing down her face. She staggered back, regrouped, took aim, and spread five shots across the field in front of her. Another shot rang out, and she watched in amazement as a man fell from a tree about 50 feet away from her. When he hit the ground, his rifle flew from his hands, bounced along the dirt, and shattered against a tree. She looked behind her from where the shot had come. Sam Wingo was lowering his weapon. He locked gazes with her for a second. She nodded in thanks, and then Wingo was gone from her view. She had no idea where Tyler was. Maybe Wingo had gotten him to safety and then come back to help. Whatever the reason, Michelle was grateful. Michelle wheeled around and sprinted flat out toward the engine sounds of the Land Cruiser that she knew as well as she did her own name. When she broke into the clearing, she saw a man lying face down. For a moment, she was paralyzed because she thought it was Sean. Then the Land Cruiser flew in reverse toward her, and the passenger door was thrown open. Sean yelled, "Get your butt in here!" Michelle jumped in. Sean shifted to drive and mashed down the pedal. The truck flew forward, its back wheels slipping a bit in the dirt before gaining traction, and then they were racing down the road. When they hit asphalt again, Sean looked at her and exclaimed, "You're bleeding."
"Thanks for noticing,"
she replied. She reached down to the floorboard and picked out a tattered towel from the jungle of items and trash there. She rubbed the blood off. "I doubt that's clean."
"I doubt I care."
"Are you okay?" She looked in the vanity mirror, moving her hair out of the way to reveal a cut along her scalp.
"Just a shallow bleeder. Blowback from tree bark, not a bullet,"
she added. She rummaged in the glove box, pulled out some antiseptic, sprayed it on the wound, and then covered it with a Band-Aid. She sat back against the seat and let out a long breath.
"We just used up all of our 9 lives back there."
He nodded. "And lost Wingo and Tyler in the process. I hope to God they didn't get killed or captured." He suddenly slowed. "Do you think we should go back?"
"No, I think they got out okay."
"How do you know?"
"He saved my life,"
Michelle said quietly.
Sean shot her a glance. Who did?
Sam Wingo. One of the guys after us got a sightline on me from a tree with a sniper rifle. Wingo got the kill shot on him before he could take me out.
Well, maybe he is on the right side after all. She glanced at him.
What about the guy back by the truck? What happened?
I figured they followed one of us here, either us or Tyler. I didn't think they would have gotten a lead on Wingo that fast. I assumed they'd station someone at the vehicle in case we got back to it. I took him out before he could take me out.
I didn't hear a shot.
That's because I hit him in the head with a rock.
You got close enough to do that?
No, I hit him from about 30 feet away.
With a rock?
She said in amazement. I never told you I was a pitcher in college?
No, you never did, Sean.
Well, it was good to see I still had some stuff.
What do we do now?
Our problem is, I think they followed us to get to Wingo.
You think he thinks we did it on purpose?
No. Not with the other guys drawing down on you. And I heard other shots.
I got two of them. Non-kills, but they'll be out of action for a while.
Then Wingo must know we were ambushed too, Sean replied.
Which still doesn't answer my question, what now?
We need to hook back up with Wingo and Tyler. He's the only path forward that I can see. Otherwise, we'll keep going around in circles until one bullet or bomb doesn't miss.
So how do we hook back up with them?
You ask a lot of questions. Want to give some answers a try on your own?
Well, we know what Wingo currently looks like. He changed his appearance quite a bit.
So?
If we can get a hold of some footage at the airports, we might get a line on how he got back in the country. He had to come by plane. Ocean freighter would have taken a lot longer.
Good idea.
Thanks. I have one a year.
So do we go to McKinney or Littlefield with the request?
Oh, why let one have fun over the other? Let's go to both and hit them together.
Okay, sounds like a plan.
Let's hope,
said Michelle doubtfully. Chapter 50. Alan Grant had been listening to the news with great interest. Milo Pratt's body had been discovered in his car, his throat smashed, his life gone. The police had no clues and no suspects, and were hoping the public would come forward with some leads to help them track down the murderer. Grant knew there would be no public coming forward and no leads to help track down the suspect. He had not allowed himself to be seen. He did not leave evidence behind. The body of Gene Shepherd had not been discovered. He doubted it ever would be. But even if it were, he was not unduly worried. He had effectively covered his trail. There would be no way for the police to connect him with her. He continued driving out of the city until he reached his final destination. He passed the checkpoint, drove up the steep, narrow road, and got out of the car. Grant walked around the perimeter of his new purchase. The radio station looked remarkably different than it had a short time ago. The electricity had been turned on. His men were moving with precision and urgency. When they were done, the tech team would come in and work their magic. The transmission tower was being outfitted with satellite dishes. He watched as one of his men rode high up in a cherry picker, a dish next to him in the lift bucket. Grant then turned his attention to the electronic tablet sitting on his car's hood. He needed a bit of quiet to compose this email, and the sounds of construction going on within the old radio station would not provide it. He was using an untraceable email portal. It didn't seem like anything was really untraceable these days, but that wasn't the case if you knew what you were doing, and he did. He wrote out the email, editing it over the next several minutes. As his fingers typed in the words Afghanistan and poppies, he smiled broadly. Then, satisfied with the email's contents, he hit the send key. It was like launching a torpedo. He expected this one to slam into its target with even more devastating results than had the first one, about certain rebels being funded by the U.S. government. He performed an NSA-level wipe on the tablet, obliterating any trace of the email on it, and then slipped the device into his pocket. His phone buzzed. He pulled it out and looked at the screen. His smile quickly became a frown. King and Maxwell were true escape artists, it seemed. Maxwell had shot two of his men while King had incapacitated a third. A fourth man had been killed by Sam Wingo, who had also managed to escape with his son Tyler. Grant put the phone back into his pocket, leaned against his car, looked at the dark sky, and shut his eyes. He hummed the melody from Rhapsody in Blue, a favorite method of his to relax. When he finished, he opened his eyes, looked over at the radio station, and calmly thought about his next move. The email he had just sent would detonate like a bombshell in D.C. Then the shock waves would emanate out from there. It was so easy to get a message to go viral these days, what with all the outlets on social media and with all the idle eyeballs looking for the next big thing to pass on through the digital spectrum. So his plan was good there. Not so good on other counts. The former Secret Service agents were seriously hampering his efforts. But for them, he would be much farther ahead. And Wingo now would go deep under and take his son with him. It made no sense to go full bore after him right now. Better to go after a target that wasn't as hardened or as elusive. King and Maxwell were the low-hanging fruit. The pair obviously wasn't an easy target, but Grant played the percentages. And that way of looking at things told him they were the ones to focus on. And there were ways to do that without necessarily going after either of them directly. He didn't want any more casualties on his end. He pulled out his tablet and entered some search terms. The response was fast and illuminating. He looked at the Facebook page of the person. Young, sweet, innocent. She could have no idea what was about to hit her like a tsunami. King and Maxwell would be his go-to target. Once he got to them, he could leverage them to get to Wingo. With him off the board, Grant could feel far more confident about his plan succeeding. He made a call and conveyed his instructions. It would be carried out quickly and efficiently, he was certain of that. Then he looked at his radio station. This was the key. This was the whole ball game right here. If he could make this work, nothing else really mattered. Chapter 51. Tyler sat on the thin mattress and stared over at him. Sam Wingo was at the window of the hotel room peering out, a gun in one hand, his other hand curled around the window drape. "Dad?" said Tyler in a shaky voice. Wingo held up a hand to quiet his son. He lingered at the window for a few more minutes, his gaze running up and down the streets, to the tops of the buildings and the windows facing him, to the cars parked down below, to the people moving along the sidewalks. Finally, he closed the drapes, slipped the gun into his holster, and turned to his son. Wingo started to say something, but then stopped as he saw the terror in his son's eyes. He drew up a chair next to the bed and sat down in it, his knees nearly touching Tyler's. "I'm sorry, Tyler. I'm sorry for all of this, everything I put you through. I'm just glad you're alive, Dad." Wingo wrapped his arms around Tyler, and they sat there swaying a bit. When Wingo drew back, he took a deep breath and began speaking. "First, I know all the stuff you've heard on the news. I didn't steal the money, and I'm not a traitor to my country. I was set up."
"I know that, Dad. I never thought you did any of that stuff."
"I'm going to find out who did set me up, though. I know you will." They grew silent, each staring at the other intently. Wingo finally rose and paced the small room. Tyler looked around the space.
"Are we going to stay here? I mean, I've got school and a swim meet coming up."
Wingo stopped pacing and looked over at him. "We can't stay here, no. And as for school and swimming..." He started pacing again.
"What about Jean?" asked Tyler.
His father sat down in the chair.
What about her?
Who was she?
Wingo looked markedly uncomfortable by this question.
Tyler hurried on.
See, I heard she was a plant, that you thought she was working with you, but maybe she was really working for someone else, like a spy.
Who told you that?
Sean and Michelle.
King and Maxwell, the PIs?
Yeah.
Is it true? Was she a plant?
It's complicated, Tyler.
Now Tyler frowned and sat up straighter on the bed.
No, it's not, Dad. Either she was or she wasn't.
Wingo pressed his palms against his thighs.
Jean was assigned to stay with you while I was away.
Assigned to stay with me?
Were you two even married?
Wingo shook his head.
No, it wasn't like that. It was just her mission. Her job was to be with you while I was gone.
Tyler looked dully at him.
So, Mom was replaced with somebody who was doing a job?
Wingo flushed.
It wasn't like that at all, son.
And you kept all of this from me, your son, for almost a whole year?
I couldn't know about any of it?
It was classified, Tyler. I couldn't tell anyone not in the loop.
Great. I was out of the loop. Glad to know you had a good reason.
He stood and went over to the window, looking out.
Tyler, keep away from there, exclaimed Wingo.
Don't worry about me, Dad. I'm not in the loop. I'm not part of the mission.
Tyler, please. I couldn't tell you.
Couldn't or wouldn't?
Tyler turned to face him.
I didn't even know you were still in the army. I thought you had a job at some company.
That was also part of the cover, Wingo said miserably.
Right, cover. From everybody, including me.
I took an oath, son, to serve my country to the best of my ability.
Yep, and country trumps family every time, right? Maybe I'll join the army when I get out of high school. Then I can keep shit from you and you won't be able to complain because I'm serving my country.
I'm not proud of how I handle this, son. I feel awful how this turned out.
Not as bad as me.
Wingo started to say something and then closed his mouth.
Tyler looked back out the window.
What do we do now?
Wingo glanced at him.
I need to find out who set me up.
How?
I've got a few leads.
And what about me?
You can't go back to school, not now.
You have to stay with me. I'll be able to keep you safe.
Tyler turned to face him.
You killed a man. I saw it.
Wingo rose and stood next to him.
I'm sorry you had to see that.
But I had to do it. He was going to shoot her.
Michelle Maxwell. I like her.
I like them both.
Do you trust them?
Yes, and you should too. They can help you. They're smart.
Wingo pulled his son away from the window and sat him back on the bed.
I'm not sure we can trust anyone, Tyler.
They can help you, Dad. They led those men right to us.
That wasn't their fault.
There's no room for mistakes, Tyler.
Will you let them help?
I don't think I can, said Wingo.
Then I'll go to him.
I said you had to stay with me.
That's what you said.
That doesn't mean I have to.
You're my son. I didn't travel 7,000 miles to get back to you only to lose you again.
But I'm out of the loop. You can't tell me anything, so how can I help you?
You need to stay with me so I can keep you safe.
They can keep me safe.
Tyler, this is not open for discussion.
How can you keep me safe and find out who set you up? You'll be putting me in danger if I come with you.
Wingo pressed his hand against his temple.
Face it, Dad. You need help. You need Sean and Michelle.
Wingo slowly sat down in the chair.
Do you really think they can help?
Yeah, I do.
Wingo looked up at his son.
Do you trust me?
Tyler stared at his father.
I believe you when you said you did nothing wrong, but I'm not sure I trust you. At least not yet.
Wingo nodded and looked down.
After all this, I guess I can't blame you. But you're still my dad. And we have to get through this. Okay?
Okay.
Chapter 52. Sean and Michelle were on one side of the table, while Agents McKinney and Littlefield were on the other. It was the next morning, and they were in a conference room at a DHS satellite office in Virginia. Both agents looked dour. Sean said, "So still no Tyler Wingo?" Littlefield said, "We'll get him." Michelle interjected,
"You better hope you do before somebody gets to him first."
"What's that supposed to mean?" said McKinney. She replied,
"Pretty simple, actually. People are after his dad. Means they might use his son to get to the father."
"Yeah, we've considered that," said Littlefield. "So why the face-to-face now?" Sean said, "You know, we met with POTUS. He made a request. We're going to accept that request." Littlefield and McKinney sat up straighter.
"Okay," said Littlefield.
"But we have a little problem,"
added Michelle.
"What's that?" said Littlefield.
"The president wanted us to use our relationship with Tyler to get to his father."
Sean added, "But you lost Tyler. Now I'm sure the president knows about that, right?"
McKinney glanced at Littlefield, who directed his gaze at the floor.
"Agent Littlefield?" began McKinney.
Littlefield said, "The president is a busy man. We can't interrupt him with every little thing."
"Little thing?" said Sean. "Tyler Wingo is the most important teenager in the country right now."
"Shit," muttered McKinney, but a tiny smile escaped his lips, probably at the thought of the FBI's plight in this case.
Michelle focused her attention on him.
"And I don't think the president, when he finds out, will take the time to specifically assess blame, Agent McKinney. FBI, DHS, to him, it will all be the same. Alphabets that royally screwed up."
The smile faded from McKinney's lips.
Littlefield said, "Okay, you've shown your hand and it's a strong one. What do you want?"
"Some cooperation and information sharing," said Sean.
"Such as?" asked Littlefield wearily.
Michelle answered,
"Such as all surveillance camera footage from Dulles, Reagan National, and BWI for the last 5 days.
"Why?" asked McKinney.
"If Sam Wingo is back in the country, we figure he came by plane, commercial, private, or cargo."
"We've already run that with facial recognition software," said Littlefield.
Sean looked at Michelle.
"I'm not feeling the love here. What say we go back to the president and see if he'll authorize it if these guys won't?"
"Sounds good to me," said Michelle.
She started to get up.
"Wait, wait," said Littlefield, holding up his hands. "I guess two more pairs of eyes on it won't hurt. But it's a lot of footage."
"Not if you know what you're looking for."
"And you do?" asked McKinney suspiciously.
"Secret Service. We've got the best eyes in the business."
"Right," snorted McKinney.
Sean pointed to McKinney's ear. "You got some shaving cream in your right ear. Guess you missed it this morning. Surprised your DHS buds didn't point it out." He looked at Littlefield. "Or your good friend at the FBI." McKinney stabbed his finger in his ear and looked at the shaving cream on it. Michelle smiled.
"That one was free of charge."
An hour later, Sean and Michelle were sitting in front of a bank of computer screens.
"Which airport first?"
said Michelle. "Let's dial up Dulles, it's closest. And Reagan doesn't handle international flights from the places Wingo would be coming from." 6 hours and 3 cups of coffee each later, they sat back looking defeated. Michelle said,
"Without facial recognition software, this is going to take forever. There are just too many faces to do manually."
Sean nodded in agreement, thinking hard. "Let's focus on cargo. Even with his new look, I don't think Wingo would chance flying commercial." They dialed up that segment of the footage. They started watching when Sean realized something. "This footage is probably too recent.
Wingo was probably already back in the country by then. Michelle grabbed his arm.
Wait, check out the car.
Sean sat back and focused on a car that was parked outside one of the cargo terminals.
That's Wingo, exclaimed Sean.
And it looks like he's watching someone. Can you adjust the angle?
Sean hit some keys and the screen changed to show Wingo's sight lines. A man was coming out of a building. He got into a car and drove off. Sean hit some more keys, and they watched as Wingo pulled onto the road and started following the other man's car. He's tailing the guy, observed Sean. Michelle was typing in something in her phone.
License plate of both cars,
she explained. Sean nodded while he again changed the footage angle. Heron Air Service, he said, reading the sign on the side of the building from where the man had come. Michelle saw this and hit some more keys on her phone.
You think that's the folks he rode back in on? I just Googled them. Among other things, they run an international cargo service.
But if he'd gotten a ride with them, why tail them?
That's true.
Maybe he was running down a lead on the money, said Sean. Maybe Heron had something to do with transporting the billion euros.
We need to run down the same lead, then. How do you want to go about it?
Deceit and lies. The usual template.
I could go on bended knee to Edgar and see if he can run these plates for us.
Good idea. And I'll find out all I can on Heron Air Service.
And the feds?
We tell them we found nothing on the footage, and we eat our humble pie.
Not in a trusting mood?
I haven't been in a trusting mood for 25 years. He leaned back in his chair. But we have to keep in mind that those guys followed us to Wingo, Michelle. They're still gunning for us, which means we have to take evasive action.
Tough to do while we're investigating this.
But we have to. Unless and until Sam Wingo wises up, we have to follow up everything solo.
And wall the feds off at the same time, and the president. Tall order, Sean.
Where's your usual can-do spirit that I know and love? He said with a smile.
I think I left it back at either the blown-up motel room or the woods where we nearly got shot.
He shrugged. You were the one who got us involved in this sucker. So in for a dime, in for a dollar. She drew a long breath.
Yeah, I know. I'm just wondering when we're going to run out of change.
Chapter 53. Michelle sat in the passenger seat of the car, staring down at her phone. Sean was in the driver's seat. It was a vehicle they had borrowed from a friend. They had stayed the night at a motel, paying in cash. And? He asked expectantly, looking at her.
Edgar came through. The plates on Wingo's car belonged to a vehicle that was impounded by the DC cops about a month ago.
He stole the plates off it to replace the ones on his, probably a rental. He's using a fake ID and didn't want anyone to be able to trace it back and blow his cover.
That's right. He's probably got one ID and a credit card pack based on that. That gets blown, he's out of resources.
What about the other vehicle?
Registered to a Vista Trading Group, LLC, based in D.C. Their office is over off L Street, Northwest.
And what do we know about Vista Trading Group?
Consultants in the defense contracting arena. They operate in lots of countries, but they seem to have a specialty in the Middle East.
Special enough to steal a billion euros?
Maybe.
Connection to Heron Air Service?
Nothing mentioned on the site.
Did you dig deeper on Heron?
They're a private charter service. They've got 10 aircraft. All have the capability to fly across the pond and then beyond with a jet fuel fill-up.
And the guy driving?
No clue. His photo wasn't on any screen page. The president of Vista is someone named Alan Grant. His bio's on here. Late 30s family man, former military, MBA from Wharton.
She held up her phone.
Here's his picture. Nice looking guy.
Sean glanced at it. But no picture of the guy in the car we saw. She shook her head.
Nothing on Vista's website. And Heron didn't have a site, which seems odd.
Well, if he is involved in this, he should ask for a raise to compensate him for the prison time he'll soon be doing.
How do we hit Vista?
Tricky, because some of them might have already seen us.
so my usual plan of hitting them head-on is probably out.
We can establish an op post and see what falls out.
Or we can do some digging on this Grant guy. Background, business associates, what he's done in the past. You said he was former military. She nodded.
Doesn't say where or what on the bio, though.
The Pentagon keeps meticulous records. I can check on that discreetly.
So they took the money, why?
Well, a billion in cash has its own built-in motive, doesn't it?
But what about the blogger that dropped the bombshell on the money being funneled to Muslim rebels?
That does make it more complicated, I grant you.
The White House is taking it on the chin. I don't think this is just about stealing money, Sean.
Maybe we should follow up with the blogger. What was his name again?
George Carlton. Address in Reston, but you said he might be lying low.
Well, then we'll just have to dig deep. But if he's getting his info from a source, we need to find that source. And the most direct way to do that is to get to Carlton.
You want me to get Edgar to dig into Grant and Vista?
You think he will? He got in trouble last time. Michelle looked at him.
I think he will if we both ask him.
Both of us? Why?
He looks up to you, Sean.
He's 6'9". He doesn't look up to anyone except NBA centers.
You know what I mean.
I'm surprised Bunting will let us near him after what happened.
Well, we saved Edgar's life. And Edgar is a very special and good person. He will never forget that.
Sean glanced out the window. Okay, call him and see if he has time to meet. Maybe we can very discreetly involve him in this. But he needs to understand he can leave no trail. I don't want Bunting jumping down my throat again.
Well, we have the president behind us now. That trumps DOD and Peter Bunting, doesn't it?
He smiled. Good point.
Let's just make sure we're not followed.
He put the car in drive while Michelle made the call to Edgar. 2 hours later, they were staring across at Edgar Roy, who sat opposite them at an outdoor cafe many miles from where he labored on behalf of the U.S. government.
We're sorry about what happened before, Edgar,
began Michelle. Mr. Bunting was very upset, said Edgar as he stared off. I don't like it when people scream like that.
Me either, chimed in Sean. And we appreciate your running down those plates for us. I hope Mr. Bunting doesn't find out about that.
Mr. Bunting is very smart, but he's not that smart, replied Edgar.
Meaning you covered your tracks well?
I like helping you both, said Edgar. I know you're trying to help other people, just like you helped me.
Sean glanced at Michelle. That's right, Edgar. And we wouldn't come to you unless we really needed the kind of help you can provide. It's important. We're actually working for the President of the United States on this.
Then I'm sure Mr. Bunting will have no problem at all with me helping you. What do you need?
They explained about Vista Trading Group and Alan Grant. Michelle added,
Really, all you can find out about the company and the man.
He's mixed up in all this? Asked Edgar.
We suspect he might be.
I can get to work on this today. What about the wall? Asked Sean. Maintenance issues, so I have some spare time.
A break from saving the world?
Said Michelle, smiling.
What? Said Edgar, looking at her strangely.
It was just a little joke,
said Michelle, looking embarrassed.
Oh, okay, said Edgar, and he attempted a smile. But it will probably take some time.
Sean said, That's okay. We have some leads to follow up at the Pentagon. Whatever you find, you can just email to us.
Do you have good encryption on your end? Asked Edgar.
Password protected, he replied.
Your password is 0508. That's not very strong.
A stunned Sean said, How did you know my password?
It's your date of birth backward. I got it on the third try when I hacked you a while back. I would have gotten it on the second attempt, but I didn't think you would be so obvious.
Why did you hack me?
I didn't know you as well back then. I didn't know if you were my friend or not. I never hack my friends.
So, did you hack Michelle too? He asked.
Edgar glanced at Michelle.
No.
Why not? Demanded Sean.
I knew right away that Ms. Maxwell was my friend.
Thanks, Edgar,
said Michelle, giving Sean a poke in the ribs with her elbow.
I'll change my password to something stronger, groused Sean.
All right, but don't simply add your year of birth. That's not good enough.
Sean's expression made clear that was precisely what he was planning to do.
What exactly would you suggest, then? He asked in an exasperated tone.
Random numbers and letters, uppercase, lowercase, sensitive, that do not correlate to any of your personal data in any way. 30-character minimum. And don't write it down anywhere.
Sean looked dumbstruck.
Great, but how exactly am I supposed to remember 30 random characters without writing it down? Which sort of defeats the whole super-duper secret code thing.
Edgar looked perplexed.
You can't remember 30 random characters?
No, I can't, snapped Sean.
Michelle chimed in.
He's older, Edgar. Losing brain cells at a daily rate you can't even imagine.
I'm very sorry to hear that, said Edgar somberly. Then if you really must, you can cut it to 25 characters, but no less than that, he suggested.
Thanks, said Sean curtly. I'll get right on it.
Chapter 54.
He was at the cemetery again, staring at the same two graves.
The inscription on the grave on the left said that Franklin Grant had been a wonderful husband, loving father, and true patriot.
I miss you, Dad, said Grant. I miss you more every day. You should be here. You should be a grandfather to my kids.
He turned to the other grave. Loving wife and mother read the inscription. He had tried to keep the image such inscriptions inspired in his head, but he had been unable to for a very good reason. As a 13-year-old, he had inadvertently seen a picture of his parents dead in their car, their asphyxiated features deadly pale, and their bulging eyes wide open as they sat slumped against each other, their suicide pact complete.
Miss you too, Mom, Grant mumbled, and he did.
But his gaze and thoughts turned back quickly to his father. He had been a true patriot who had bled for his country. He had risen far. He had worked in the White House. As a boy, Grant had gone there with his father, shaken the hand of the President of the United States at the time, seen the center of power of the strongest nation on earth. It had left an indelible impression on him. It had been a compelling reason he had joined the military. But the truth behind his father's tragic end had left a far deeper mark, like a third-degree burn. He doubted it would ever fully heal. The one thing that kept Grant going was that he had his plan. It was being executed, and it was succeeding, albeit with some bumps along the way. He'd expected that. Plans this complex could not unfold free of problems. He had been ready for such an eventuality, and it was a good thing. He placed the flowers on his parents' graves, said a last goodbye, and turned and walked back to his car. An hour later, he was walking into his house and greeting his children. His 7-year-old son was in school, but his 5-year-old daughter and 2-year-old toddler came hurrying over to him. He scooped up his son in his arms, took his daughter by the hand, and walked into the kitchen, where his wife was making lunch. Leslie Grant was in her middle 30s, and as lovely as the day he had proposed to her. They kissed. Then Grant snatched a cucumber from the salad she was preparing and walked into the adjacent living room carrying his son. Dan Marshall was sitting in front of the large screen TV, dressed in khaki pants and a flannel shirt with tasseled loafers on his feet. Grant put down his son, who quickly raced off to join his sister in the playroom. Grant turned to Marshall, who was cradling a beer and watching ESPN on the TV.
How are the Wizards doing? Asked Grant.
Better.
Nets drilled us last time. Hopefully we can return the favor tonight.
Marshall handed Grant a beer. Grant popped it and took a swig before sitting down in the recliner and studying his father-in-law.
How you doing? He asked.
Been better, said Marshall.
Work?
Marshall sat back and turned his attention from the ball game to Grant.
I've never stopped missing Maggie, he said, speaking about his late wife. But this is the first time I'm also glad she's not around to see this.
Grant put the beer down.
When we last spoke, I didn't take away from your comments that it was that bad.
Well, we were at the Pentagon. One has to watch what is said there.
So it's worse?
Marshall sighed, drained his beer, and put the empty bottle down.
It's bad, Alan. I signed off on this mission. I had my doubts, but the orders from the top were crystal clear. It was going to happen, with my rubber stamp or without.
So why would the blame fall to you, then?
You obviously don't understand how government and the DOD in particular works.
I was in the military.
But never in the military bureaucracy. It has its own rules, and many of them don't make sense. But one you can count on is that when the civilian leadership screws up a matter connected to the military, folks in uniform are going to be left holding a big part of the blame.
But you're not technically in uniform.
Doesn't matter. I've got the office and the title, and the ball weighs about 1 ton and is heading right for me. Worst case, I'm squashed. Best case, I'm severely wounded.
So what outcome do you really see?
I'll spend my remaining days testifying in front of Congress. If I'm lucky, I'm not indicted. If I'm not lucky, we might be talking prison.
Jesus, Dan, I had no idea.
Grant, of course, had every idea, but still he felt badly for the man.
Is there anything I can do for you?
Marshall patted his arm. Look, we all have troubles. Now, you've got a great family, and you've made my little girl very happy. You just keep doing what you're doing. Things will shake out one way or another.
I plan to keep on doing what I'm doing, thought Grant.
They had lunch, and neither of the men made any mention of Marshall's dilemma in front of Leslie and the kids. After the meal was over, Marshall said his goodbyes. Grant gave him a handshake and a hug.
I'm sorry, Dan, he said, and he actually meant it.
But when it came to avenging his father's death, there was no one Grant was not willing to sacrifice, and that included himself.
He walked out into the backyard, sat in a lawn chair, and stared at the sky.
He watched a plane begin its final descent into Dulles Airport.
He, too, felt as though he were in his final descent. The radio station was coming along. His itinerary seemed to be rock solid and very promising. The satellite he had leased was perfectly situated to do what needed doing, and the fragments left on there would be very helpful in getting him to the necessary outcome. And that necessary outcome was that someone had to pay for a wrongful act committed 25 years ago. That injustice had cost his father his life. His father was the only one who had really paid a price. Now it was time for others to do so. It had become the most compelling force in Grant's life. It was not a goal of his. It was an obsession.
And obsessions tended to blind one to all other things.
Grant was aware of this, but he also found he could do nothing about it. That's what an obsession was, after all. Thus, he had chosen to risk his father-in-law's career and perhaps his life to attain this goal. He would even sacrifice his family's happiness if it came down to it. Because Grant could not be happy unless the wrong was righted. And he knew of only one way to do it. Nothing could get in the way of that. And if something did, it would have to be removed, with force if necessary. just like he had done with Gene Shepard and Milo Pratt.